You're listening to the Reinvest Podcast, where each Tuesday we will show you how to reclaim, reconnect, and refocus your life by bringing you the top real estate professionals in the industry. We'll pull back the curtain so you can implement these tools and tactics to build generational wealth. Your hosts, Garrett Gatton and Seth Simonillo. Hey, 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 thank you for joining on another episode of the Reinvest Podcast. It's Garrett and Seth on the mic here and in the studio. Got a great episode for you guys today that I think you're going to relate to, and a question that we've probably all struggled with or are currently struggling with, and hopefully we can provide some good answers for that. But before we get into that, I was looking on CoStar the other day, yesterday to be precise, and one of the big topics right now and has been for the last like 18 months has been interest rates. And let me read this headline. Yeah, I know. What a quandary, huh?
No one's been thinking about it. I'm glad you brought it up.
Here is the headline. Here's one big hint investors are looking to buy, betting on lower rates. And so I kind of perused the article, and essentially the nuts and bolts of it is that there's an uptick with national investment firms that are raising funds through REITs. If you don't know what a REIT is, look it up, in anticipation of lower rates. And so they're kind of looking at the big movers and shakers on the national scene, and they're positioning themselves to buy, thinking that rates are going to go low. So, which is interesting because we've seen, talked to some operators that would actually like to see interest rates stay high because they're sick individuals.
They want interest rates to stay high. I think really just to starve out some of the bad operators.
Yeah.
Really essentially what they want. I don't know. That's what we've heard. Hey, I don't want anybody to fail.
Right.
But also don't be a bad operator. So there's your little tidbit. Today we have a great guest. We have Kyle Reedstrom. Did I say your last name right?
Nailed it.
Awesome. How you doing, Kyle?
Very good. Glad to be here, guys.
Awesome. So Kyle, you work with Midwest Invest Realty Group. Is that right?
That's it. Yep.
Okay. Yep. And you said that was a part of the company Real?
Yeah. Real Broker. Yeah. Real's only about 16,000 agents. And so it's kind of an up and comer, publicly traded, stocks low. So, you know, buy now.
now's the time to get in.
You said they're like EXP 2.0.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's kind of a controversial thing, right? Like EXP and then the second version came online, but it's a really interesting, I was attracted to it because we were just a mom and pop shop in Fargo and we wanted to have, build asset wealth into something bigger than ourselves because you can't sell a dang brokerage. Right. I mean, maybe people do, but you can't where I'm from. And so we wanted to kind of have a bigger vision, which kind of plays into a lot of our passive income and wealth building strategy. So it was a cool alignment there, but yeah.
So, and just to give our listeners some context, I know that you've kind of, you've pivoted a little bit, but I love the concept and it seems like it's still near and dear to your heart. You're just trying to build that out, but talk about Passive 25K, the group that you started and, just kind of what's the concept of that?
Yeah. So I love vision, right? But vision without goals is just dreaming. And when you have a dream, it's just this thing that you thought of at night. And it's like, maybe you tell your spouse about it, but it never really happened, you know? And I think a lot of visionary people, especially like growth mindset individuals, real estate people, a lot of them are visionary style. They do a lot of visions turn into dreams. And we wanted a vision turned into reality. And so we had to apply goals to it. And that's when we got real in about 2018. And we said, what's our finish line? We kept saying, focus and finish line, focus and finish line. And the thing that I had been doing my whole real estate career up until that point was kept moving the goalposts downfield when I'd hit them, right? And you'd never get the word more was my answer, you know? And so it's like, okay, what's our number? We decide on $25,000 a month. We don't need $25,000 a month to live on. That's not our lifestyle, but it's enough for us to give what we want to give, keep investing, keep doing projects. And we wanted it passive, you know? So like we were knocking on that door actively, but we're like, hey, we want to move this towards passivity. That's the goal to get our options back into our life. And so we said, what better way than to start a company with the literal name, Passive 25K Group. Everything we do is going to fall under that umbrella. Everything we do that we say yes to in business has to be filtered through that vision. So if I get an opportunity to invest in, you know, be one of the operators of a franchise in town, I have to say no, because that's not, could it be passive eventually? Maybe. Yes. Then I could say yes to it, but it's like, I really helps filter my decision-making and my wife's. And then we were able to start kind of creating community around that of other people that had a similar vision. It was crazy. We chose the number 25 and a lot of people were like, hey, that's the number we were thinking of too. Oh, wow. You know?
Yeah. So, real quick. So what did you do? So you started the passive 25K group and we kind of alluded that you are a realtor.
Yep.
So you sell real estate kind of as your active income right now. What did you do prior to getting into real estate? Do you invest in real estate personally?
Yeah. So like my biggest thing, of course, real estate investing was the thing, which is, you know, we're on the Reinvest podcast here. This is perfect because I was an engineer. I was struggling. I was mad in my cubicle with a manager that literally would walk by and like watch me type and see if I was working. And I'd like catch him in my peripherals. Like, I'm like, this is not my vision of what I wanted. And so I started reading all the books. Classic purple book fell into my hands called Rich Dad, Poor Dad, changed my thinking. And then I just used my 2 years of engineering work as planning to acquire and you know, make my exit. Cause I had the classic epiphany. It's funny. I bought a house in college and I was getting about $400 a month in cash flow. And I would watch and I'd check the bank account way more than is healthy, right? After the rent check would come in. And it was $400, slow build, but that's $5,000 a year. And I was making about $52,000 as an engineer out of college. And I said, 10 of these and I'm free. Like, there's the simple equation, right?
Yeah.
That was just on the income side, right? Not on the expenses, but that was my vision. I was like, this is where I'm going. And so that led me into enough conversations with real estate people in Fargo, where I ran into a guy named Eric. He said, you should just become a real estate agent. It's a much better use of your skills. And so, yeah, I said yes. And the rest was history. But so I started with real estate investing as the number one. Like, and I say to anybody that has a passive income vision, like, real estate is just one of those time tested, proven.
Yeah.
Versions of what you need. That should be one of your pillars. But right. Then it's like, what are the other ones? You know? And so that's where we started using that vision to filter. Yeah.
So I think how you're going to answer kind of the next leg of your journey and catching us up to where you're focusing now, that's going to set the framework for what we're going to talk about. So what do you, after passive 25, what do you guys focus on now?
Yeah. So it was crazy. We started telling people about this vision via our brand and our pod. We started a podcast for 2 years, passive25kgroup.com or P25KG.com still exists. Our pods are all there. We actually have kind of a community with you know, classes and everything built out. We started talking about it with people and people loved it. But it was the implementer in me, nobody was taking action on the material. And we had some bomb guests. We had some people dropping things that were like, what? Like, this is a really cool. I think of the gal from New Zealand that I interviewed that literally owned a book of 30 online businesses, like blogs and things like that. And she lived completely financially free lifestyle. Wow. She was like just coming off the mountain and she skied all morning. And she's like, I had to do this podcast. So that's why I'm here. But you know,
let's wrap this up. I'm getting back on the slopes.
Yeah. And it was like, dude, she just has operators in online business. Anyway, it's like an episode in the 30s. I'm pitching the old podcast now. But the thing that really got me was nobody was taking action on these awesome tools the guests were giving. I was just like, what am I doing? People are just here to watch be entertained by the content, not actually use it, right? And I was just like convicted by that. So actually taking a step back from that podcast and dove back into more of like, hey, let's help people. And specifically what I do now is try to help real estate agents raise the bridge of their income. Because if you can get your income, I think there's a lot of budgeting content out there. There's a lot of, you know, ways to manage your finances out there, strategy and tax. There's not a lot of like, just work really hard and raise the heck out of your income. Like, squeeze that orange right. as much as you can.
Yeah.
You know, cause people, I don't think people understand how much money they can actually make if they really work at it.
Right.
Well, everyone wants to hit the easy button. And when you say, all you got to do is work really hard and then just have good fundamentals, and people are like, yeah, like that sounds, that sounds no fun.
Well, and honestly, it's not just working hard. Like, you know, this has been some of the conversation that you and I have had, Seth. Yeah. Like, working hard is not our issue predominantly. It's knowing how to maximize the energy you're putting out.
Yeah, it's nice. Pulling those right levers. And, you know, if you've ever read the book E-Myth, it's a good book. But it's all about delegating and getting rid of the low-income tasks, the $5 tasks, the $10 tasks. And that way, your time's freed up to spend time on the, you know, $50, $100, $1,000-an-hour tasks that actually will move the needle on your business.
It's hard to give
I love
those
that
up.
You just brought up.
I don't know why, but sorry, go ahead, Kyle.
I love that you just brought up dollar per hour activity. Like, you're so right. I mean, I actually, in 2023, right at the end of 2023, I, with a small group of guys, I did a 3-week time audit where you have to monitor every 15 minutes of your life for three weeks.
Whoa.
It was arduous. It sucked, but you had to rate your each 15 minutes zero to, you had a $1 sign or $4 signs if it was income producing. And then you also had to color it green or red if it was energy giving or not. So you got a productivity score and an energy score from every week. And it was such an eye opener. And it's like, hey, we don't have to work harder. We have to work better and efficient and smarter, like you said.
Wow.
Yeah. That's good.
So what we're going to talk about today is kind of answering this question. Should everyone's goal be to become a full-time investor? Seth and I get this question a lot. Honestly, it's one we ask ourselves. And I think it's one naturally. When you discover real estate investing, there's so many resources that you can plunge into. And then Alexa, Amazon, and the Google, they get your number and they start throwing you all these clickbait things on YouTube, right? And they're like, hey, we heard through the grapevine that you're looking for a passive, you know, income, and real estate's the way to do it. And so then you're barraged with all this information. And so then you're like, well, maybe that's what I need to do. And you think there's one approach, you know, and it's to quit your job in 3 years. So first of all, I just want to give you a chance to get on your high horse. Give us your thoughts on how the internet portrays real estate investing.
So we hit it on the head with, it's completely, I say it this way. There's a pendulum that needs to swing, and the pendulum on each side is analysis and education, and the other side is action. And I think what the internet does is it puts like bubble gum on this side, and when the pendulum swings, it's stuck. And everybody just watches content, reads books, and listens to podcasts, and all of those things are deemed good until you're driving 45 minutes twice a day, and that's the only thing you're doing, and you're never acting, because all of the learning, any story that I'm going to tell you, was on this side of the pendulum, side.
Right.
You know? And so it's like the internet has paralyzed people from actually going and getting your hands dirty. I know people that have overpaid for property. They don't know any, let's call them, they're just the Dumbos of the class. Mm-hmm. And they're winning at a way greater rate because they're a moving target that can tweak their path rather than the stationary car in the parking lot. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So my father-in-law, I'm going to give him credit for this. He said, you can't steer a ship that's not moving, right? And that motion in our lives, you know, that's, you can actually start steering something. And so there's that. And then I think, you know, this is more my personality. I'll get hype on something. Like, if you come in here and you're the right person, and you kind of like, you know, come in with some energy, I'm like, shoot, cryptocurrency, let's jump in and do this. And that's not hypothesis, by the way. I actually did that. And we were laughing at lunchtime about how that turned out for me. So, so then there's like this kind of like, hey, go do it. Hey, it's easier than it looks. And like, there's going to be these quick results. I think the internet can misperceive or misportray how quick things can happen in real estate. And although you take action quickly, and you can, the results, right, they're long term, it's a slow build. There's a reason that real estate is considered to be foundational, because the returns are foundational. You know, and there are ways for sure, you know, to make big income in real estate. You know, it's not what I'm saying, but I think that can make it confusing for somebody who's thinking, how should I get into the game of real estate? What should that look like for me? So how would you counsel someone who's got a good solid job or a business who wants to get into real estate and they assume that they need to be able to quit their job in 3 years to become a full-time investor? How would you counsel somebody?
Dude, I would literally have them read the book Who Not How by Dan Sullivan and just realize, like, get out of the, like, if you can start with the mentality of like working, building a team around your vision, you're even smarter than the guy I described that's just going and doing everything himself, because he is eventually gets to the place where it works out. He's profitable, but then he needs to partner. He needs to have leverage in his life. Otherwise, he's going to lose the things that are most important, right? So that person, like people with that W-2, people that might be listening to this podcast right now sitting in a chair, I think it's such a beautiful hedge to the risk you might be thinking of in the future. You have time, you're being paid for time to calculate. And again, to not stay in that calculation for too long, but start making those partnerships. Like, I think some of the best real estate investors are the ones that have a rock star agent on board, a rock star property manager, somebody that's finding deals. You know, like they build this team that their actual skill is not an investor. It's like it's like a cohesive unit building that.
Yeah, it's the delegation.
And it's learning to delegate and lead and cast vision. And by the way, a lot of those people, like some of the best developers in my area, and I think many, they put everybody's feet to the fire. Almost everybody has vested interest in the deals, mm-hmm. and then everybody can scale at that. And it's like, man, I think probably that's one of the things that I get stuck with as an investor is I can do a lot of things. Like I can put in flooring in a unit. Should I be doing that? Right. Like, God dang it. I saved $7,000. Kyle, that's not what gets you to the next level. And some people might think, hey, I can't put in flooring in units like Kyle was saying because I have this job. It's like, hey, bigger vision here, you guys. Like, you're getting paid in a stable environment. If you're using that to getting your work done, of course, probably so you don't get fired, but using that time to strategize, you know, like I don't think that there's a rush. I think you can really build a cool vision and foundation from with, you know, think smarter, not harder, right? But
there is, you said something about the flooring example. You know, I think for me, it feels more tangible and easy to understand doing something yourself and saving money than understanding the opportunity cost. Because if I delegate the flooring, I'm not saving money. I'm paying, you know, a premium to get it done, right? With the hope then that I will go use my time to actually generate income. And that takes confidence to think that you can actually go out and do that. And so sometimes it feels safer to pull back and say, well, I don't know if I can go out and use my time to make more money, so I'm just going to do this thing and save the money. And you just hit that ceiling and you keep bouncing off of it. So for you, when you double down on real estate, like how did you build that confidence that you could actually delegate things that you could do but you shouldn't do? And then go translate that into dollars somewhere else.
You guys, this is like probably still on my list today is learning this skill. I think, and it's like, I can't figure out if it's like a part of my DNA because I see it in my dad, you know, but it's like, or is it just something I need to learn because I've read the books, right? But a good example of it would be like property management came into our passive five. We started a property management company. And the reason that got to be part of the five was because I drew a line, I want to get this going, but I can literally spend zero time. That's the requirement for this. And it's like, I have ideation. I think I know maybe how this could work. And so it had to come down to the right person. I had someone in my world that was really antsy for opportunity that way. And so we started a property management company. And to this day, like I spend less than 1 hour a week talking about or thinking about that business.
That's
and
amazing.
It's been a really successful passive business that I own 50% of. Why do I own 50%? because I had to make an ownership path for the operating partner
right
over the next 5 years to gain ownership so that this this plane would fly, right? And that's like a good example of like I finally let go of control. And has the property management company ran exactly how I would do it? No, I had to allow myself to be surprised. Has it been better because I haven't done it? Some would argue that. Do I think there's ways that I would have made it better? Yeah, because I have an ego. You know what I mean? But it's like it's actually functioning and really, really effective. And I have taken zero time on it. You know what I mean? Yeah. So
I think it's great that you've, you know, when you get those case studies for yourself in your back pocket and you're like, wow, this is, I took the risk to bring in a business partner, to be hands off on something, to delegate and find a who, and not feel like I had to be the one to figure out the how, and that it's a proof of concept, right? So those little wins carry forward when you're looking at the next hill to climb, you know, the next endeavor to tackle.
Well, and whenever you're trying to delegate, I mean, I think we all kind of, we overestimate our abilities in our own head. When we feel like we're good at something, you know what I mean? I'm really good at real estate. No one else is going to do this to my standard. It's like, okay, like you said, we have an ego. But if you could get better at the skill of training and you could train someone to even do it 80% of what you could do it,
shoot,
that should be good enough for you to like let go and then, you know, free up your time. And, you know, for you specifically, you know, you were able to divert that in other areas of your business. So
you brought up the fact that maybe somebody's doing this from the place of having a W-2 job or owning a business that is their active income, and they can rely on the who can help me do this, who can help me invest in real estate passively while still being in this spot, either indefinitely or for a time until I can, you know, have a plan and execute that to be more on that side of the fence. And the who, not how is a great principle. So what are some guiding questions or considerations for someone who's interested in real estate, but they're trying to figure out like, should I go full time? Right? Like, you see financial freedom, you see that phrase, that verbiage thrown around. And so immediately we think got to be a full-time investor to experience that. But are there times where people should stay in their job? You know, it comes down to maybe a matter of like purpose or, you know, risk tolerance. I mean, there's different ways. So as you've kind of experienced and helped other people, you know, answer that question for themselves, what are some questions somebody could ask themselves?
I love it. My mind was going in this exact place because it's super hard because I'm a squirrely entrepreneur, just like anybody, you know? And, I have a coach. I've coached with him, but I really follow a lot of what he does. And he said, I'm sick of all you entrepreneurs making 1 year and 3 year and 5 year decisions. I want you making decade decisions. He said, I want you to think in decades, not years anymore. And he said, if you're not doing something right now that you think that will be absolutely fruitful for you 10 years from now, why are you doing it? It's not going to get you where you want to go. And I looked at what I've been doing and I'm like, I'm not going to be doing that in 10 years. I'm not going to be doing that in 10 years. I'm definitely not doing that. Oh, this one, maybe, you know, it's like, oh yeah, no, wow. Like how much of this is going to last? Right. And so like, I think of that question for like the people that are considering, like, should I jump in full time? Well, if your goal is to not be full time in real estate, in 10 years, you know, like you need to ask yourself that question or pencil it out. And I really think you can back that question up with just run. Like a lot of us are numbers and spreadsheets gurus, like just do the numbers, like do the quick math. Like what reasonably is my income going to be jumping out of this job? What reasonably would it be if I stayed in it and had that income and built alongside it?
Yeah, it's good.
You know, Brandon Turner from Bigger Pockets always talks about the concept of you build two bridges at once. You know, it's going to take you twice as long rather than building one bridge, which is kind of like counterintuitive to like, hey, I'm going to be doing my job, but I'm going to be building this over here. But it's like, what numbers could you put to where this will be in 10 years? And, you know, it really forces you to get to a true end result of like how this thing all works. And I mean, man, if there's any version of engineering that really served me well, it's the way engineers think is they get an architect to create this big, crazy project or building, and then they work backwards the whole way. That's why the term reverse engineering is a thing. And so it's like you could be really, it's the classic, like, do I sharpen the axe before I go into the forest? You know, and I've walked into the forest with a dull axe and just started hacking every tree.
Oh yeah. I love that. Yeah.
Many times. So it's like, how much value is there to thinking out every step and give yourself a time frame? Like, don't live in this space, but you know, like, how much value would that be? And what have you done that? That's the question I would ask. That's the prompt I would ask.
Yeah. That's a good action item right there. Have you done that? Have you kind of reverse engineered? Right. And then probably the phase two to that is, once you start working that plan, this is just where I'm at. So I'm speaking from like today, you got to love the journey. Because as an entrepreneur or a dreamer, visionary, you're always looking forward. And sometimes you get discouraged because you don't feel like you're moving towards that fast enough, or you feel like you're spinning your wheels, right? That's why they have a book called Traction, to a, like, literally, I feel tractionless. Well, read the book Traction. Like, we all can identify with that feeling, but you got to love the journey, because it's always going to feel slower than what you want it to, which is why your coach said, I want you to think in decades. And everybody's like, that's such a long time, you know? And yeah, it is a long time, but it takes a long time to build something that's going to last for a long time. I think that's great advice, Kyle.
Well, and like, here's a crazy thing too, you guys, I just want to share real quick, is think of your goal. Like, my goal is 25,000 a month, right? So like, the simplest, most passive thing I could ever do would be to be getting a $25,000 check every month from a safe withdrawal rate from an index fund. Okay. So if I do 25,000 a month, that's 300. If you, the quick hack is, if you times that by 25, that's your number. So theoretically, if I get $7.5 million as a net worth, I can safely withdraw at 4% plus, you know what, and it's still going to grow. And I will have 25,000 a month completely 100% passive, the true definition of passive income. So wouldn't it make so much sense for me to say no to everything else and only say yes to anything that helps me get to 7.5 as fast as I can? And part of me is like, some real estate investors like, yeah, I think I'm going to get into an investment. And yeah, I want you to take action. I want you to go get that. But what if you, like, that's not the vision, is to have one. Like, what's the big, like, we don't think big enough. I don't think big enough. This is like scary, uncomfortable shit, but it helps me get to actually what I want, what my wife and I want, you know?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, especially when you throw it out there, like, I want to make 25,000 a month. People are going to be like, how? Like, you know what I mean? They're kind of like, what? You're going to make 25,000 a month? What does that even mean passively? But once you throw it out there, you're kind of holding yourself to the fire, holding your feet to the fire, because you're like, I've said it. I can't go back now. I'm not going to be a quitter. You know what I mean? I'm not going to be a quitter. So I'm going to, you know, do it or die trying, kind of thing. So there's kind of a lot of credence and power in speaking it out, even, and setting those goals.
Just to summarize everything I think that we've talked about so far is, you know, at the very beginning, you said that you and your wife had a vision. But a vision without goals is just a dream, right? And so finding what that vision is for you, I think, is number one if you're listening to this. Maybe it's not to be a full-time investor. You know, maybe it's to have passive income streams and giving credence to maybe your job today or the situation you're in is actually going to be one of those legs that's going to help make that bigger vision, you know, accomplished. Reverse engineer that and then work that plan. You know, people, they overestimate what they can do in a year and they underestimate what they can do in 5 years. So you got to have some patience here, which, you know, flies in the face of, you know, anything on social media is 10 seconds, right? And so it's rewiring our brains to think that life happens in 10 second clips, and it does not work that way. So,
and here's another fortune cookie from the richest man in Babylon. There was one of the lines in there, one of the quotes in there. They had said that wealth achieved quickly goes away quickly, but wealth achieved, you know, over a long period of time, it stays for a long period of time. And even think about in today's world, I mean, people that win the lottery, there's like a crazy high percentage of those people that they blow all that wealth. You know what I mean? They could be set up for lifetimes if they wanted to, and they could set up their children and their children's children, but they ended up just blowing it all. So It's kind of like the journey is the learning that equips you to hold on to that wealth long term. And, you know, there's just so much power and wisdom in going through the steps. Okay, we're going to go into our smaller pocket segment here. So Kyle, go ahead and tell us about a deal or a transaction that went completely wrong, whether in your personal investments or in a real estate transaction you were a part of. What went wrong, and then what did you learn from it?
Okay, so I was 24, and I was hungry, and I was doing all the listening and all the reading.
Nice.
And I was like, no, I'm going to do this. I want to buy something. And I called up. So we're all real estate agents that are talking right now, but it's funny because what I was taught was you should call up as many real estate agents as possible and get them working for you, trying to find deals for you. So I was like, never signing that buyer rep. I was like, dude, no way you're getting me as a client. And I wasn't telling anybody I was talking to everybody in town, but I was.
You're one of those. Gotcha.
Yeah, I'm the worst client that exists. Yes. And so I end up getting an older agent, been around for a long time. And he says, Kyle, you know, I know we talked last week. This guy's putting in new windows in these two fourplexes near downtown. He's like, I bet she's going to sell. You interested? I was like, yeah, I'm interested. Like, let's go check it out. Wasn't even like, you know, I think he might've talked the guy into selling it, for goodness. I don't know. But we went and looked at it. And there's this other old agent that was kind of representing him. And now this old agent was kind of representing me, right? And I don't know anything about this. These two guys are talking. And I remember being like, hey, so what's the price? And I feel like they just threw out a number. and I, you know, I had no representation. And I just said, okay. You know, looking back on it, I still own those fourplexes today, by the way, but looking back on it, if I did the math back in 2014, when I bought those buildings, I think I overpaid for those buildings by like $100,000.
Ooh.
Yeah. Yeah. Two fourplexes, right?
So you bought 8 units and you overpaid $100,000.
Yeah.
And that was because
these two guys, like, here's the thing, guys, they were pretty good buildings. Like, these were nice. Like, I was impressed.
Yeah.
These weren't like value adds. He's putting in new windows. So it was, you know, they were treated right. They were newer, like 2004 build, you know, we're not talking like, so I'm like, okay. And essentially what I did was bought a absolutely negative cash flow building. And the story goes this, I say this to everybody. I'm super big on investors putting on their investor hat, because I really get spiffed a little bit when investors constantly are just looking at the past. They're constantly like, what is the numbers right now on this investment? And what were the numbers 2 years ago? And it's like, investing is actually looking at the future more than it's looking at the past. Like, what's your vision for this property? Mm-hmm. I was forced to have vision for this property because I was underwater.
I need to raise rents.
yeah. And that's exactly, dude, I raised rents. The rents were at $600 a unit. I raised rents $250 on every unit in 18 months.
Wow. Yeah. That is aggressive.
And yeah. I had to. I had to
get it cash flowing.
And we got better. And then I had to live in it and manage it myself and mold the, you know, I had to have no expenses, you know.
So where's that property at now? So, I mean, so it was kind of a wet bite, you know what I mean? Kind of looking back, being like, wow, I kind of got taken for a ride a little bit by that agent.
Yes.
Agents.
Yeah. Well, the godfathers just took me down. Here's a good plug. You find an investor-friendly agent and then you commit to each other. How's that for an idea? You commit to them, they commit to you, and then you actually have representation in a deal. And that agent, had you had representation, could have said, hey, here's what they want. Personally, I think it's overpriced.
Well, I know how much they both made off that. And I'm like, of course. So you're 100% right, dude. Think of the money I would have made so much more money saved, you know.
Your agent looks at the other agent and he's like, what's your seller want for this? And that guy's like, when he had to go, I don't, maybe like this number. Dude, you don't have to think about it. Like, it's a number, you know?
That's awesome. So we're kind of, give us, where's that property at today?
Yeah, this is the classic story, right?
Still
this
in
is
the same spot.
We fail forward. So I still own it today. We've now pivoted because the units are nicer. We've furnished about six of the eight of those units, and now they're rented out to traveling nurses for like $1,600 a unit.
Oh, nice.
And it's like a little mini hotel.
Like
and it's
midterm rentals?
Crushing it. Yeah.
Midterm, like are you doing like
midterms,
month or longer type stuff?
Yep. And then if we don't get into traveling nurse, we go nightly with it as a short term. And it's been
nice.
Everybody really values the smaller 2-bedroom, 1-bath units.
Yep.
We had a 1-bedroom, 1-bath that was renting out for $550 a month. And that one perpetually has rented out to traveling nurse for $1,400. It's really changed the numbers for us.
That's crazy.
And we had to come up with these ideas because we needed this building to perform. And I would argue right now, you know, with all the money I overpaid, the value of that building is well over what I paid, you know, so that's
because you got in the game
and you were able to hang on to it, you know, over the last 11 years or 10 years or whatever it's been.
Yep.
And, you know, we've seen a lot of appreciation in the market, which is just another benefit of real estate is, you know, if you're able to hang on to it, you get debt paid down and it appreciates. So
that agent's going to hear this podcast and be like, don't ever say I didn't do anything for you. And just to be clear, we're not actually saying you did a good job representing Kyle. So
this is the sad that the agent that represented me actually has passed away. So, I mean, I'm getting a little morbid, but it's like,
He was
old. Like the old OG and just taking me down for his last few deals. So
that's hilarious. All right. We're going to go into what we call our little nugget. So Kyle, this is the part of our show where you give our listeners one practical takeaway piece of advice. Could be personal development, business hack, whatever you got for us.
So I had my family, I've got three little kids. And my wife, she's an agent as well. She stays home with our kids primarily right now. We had three kids in the last 5 years. So, you know, we're a little circus.
Yeah,
and we all did words of the year. We did a little paint party and I got little canvases. I'm looking at them on my wall right now. And, you know, like my daughter just put paint on her foot and just like stood on the canvas. You know, that was her word of the year's foot, apparently. But my word of the year is habits. And it happened because I just feel like I got reinvigorated by the idea that you really actually can achieve anything you really want if you can reverse engineer it to a daily thing.
Yeah.
Every habit, I think, I truly believe it has to be a daily thing. This isn't like how many times a week I do this. It's daily. And then the app Habit Share, if you don't have the app Habit Share, it's an amazing tool for me. Like literally I'll show the screen, like my little greens and reds for the week.
You know? And you can check it off or something.
Yeah. And it's just the classic checkbox. And so the cool part about Habit Share is like with my real estate team, I have certain habits and we all are like sharing each other and seeing each other do stuff. My wife and I have a few that we share with each other. And then I have a few that are just for me. Right. But this literally like every day, if chaos hits, if I don't know if I was productive that day, or you have those busy days where you're like, did I even do anything good today? I've pre-decided what is important with my, you know, now I've built on four. I started with four habits. I've built on those. And if I do those habits, I know I did the most critical activity that I pre-decided in a healthy place when I started the quarter. And so I've been preaching this. It's my word of the year on my sticky note. I had to give it a shout. And anybody that really wants to achieve something, get yourself a tool and just write out what what habits you want to commit to. And it has to be daily. And then the cool part is the end of the quarter one's coming up, and I don't do them for a year because that's daunting to me. I get discouraged. I just do them for 90 days and then I'm going to take a reset and rethink what habits I want. Maybe I'll keep some, maybe I'll delete some. And then I'll move into the quarter two with my new set of habits. So
nice.
Oh, that's really practical.
I like that. I like that app. That's kind of cool.
Yeah, we'll put that link.
Can other people see if you've completed your habits for that day? So
it
really keeps you accountable.
And you can comment and you can see when someone's just not filling it out. Yeah, it's been good. And I'm kind of a policeman when it comes to it because I'm doing my habits. I'm like, okay, I'm from that high horse where I'm going to be like, hey, what's up over here? You know?
Yeah, no, I like that. I like the accountability aspect of that.
We'll think about it. No, just kidding. Yeah. Kyle, what's been one of the best resources in your business development?
Okay, this is a little bit down the road of a hack, but I've realized that I can consume knowledge really quickly if I listen and read something at the same time. I don't know if that's exactly where you want to go with this, but like when it comes to personal development, sometimes there's somebody in my life that recommends a book and they're like, sounds like you need this book. And then I'm like, I was the guy that just ordered it on Amazon and waited to come. And that was like my action step. And now I'm able to like put it on 2X, you know, listen. Mm-hmm. And if you're reading the words, you can actually consume it. And the books, you know, a 3-4-5 hour book, you get done in like an afternoon. Whereas you think usually you kick that can down the road. And it's only for books that I really think are like, hey, there's a nugget in here you need to implement. But certain books you just need to get through. You just need to not leave them half read. You know what I mean?
Ah, yeah. I've got a lot of those.
Yeah. Listening to books has been really helpful. And sometimes I actually do that. I listen to it. And if I have the hard copy, I'll kind of like follow along. And it just makes it easier for me to think about rather than focusing on reading. And I know that might sound dumb, but sometimes I get so focused on reading that I'm not understanding. Like it must be like a learning disability. I'm not ashamed to admit it. Okay.
Yeah, dude, so, I'm there with you, man.
But listening to it and kind of looking at the word, it's somehow different and it helps me kind of just think through those principles and you're able to take away the big nuggets like what you're talking about. So I'm right there with you on that.
I read sometimes. No, I'm just kidding. No, Audible's been great. That is really good. You know, pairing your senses together so that you can actually get through it quicker. Because if I were just to listen to it on 2X, I just would only consume less of that. You know what I mean? I got it done faster, but my retention would be so low. So pairing those two together, that's a great thing.
I need someone to come out with a book that will read to me that has words and it smells like something. I don't know.
There it is.
Pair three senses.
Well, and think of it. Shoot. Think of like our lives are on time blocks. Like if you're doing that, a lot of our like lives are time blocks. So think if you could like put two time blocks in your calendar where you're just going to like power through this book and that's your strategy so you're not just like not consuming it. And you can pull up the book manuscript on your screen and it's like, dude, an hour goes by and you're like crushed the whole half of that book. It's like, okay, well, you know, not every book, but some, right?
Getting stuff done today. How can people find out more about your success and follow you and connect with you?
And if they're an agent, how can you help them?
Yeah. So I actually have this partnership right now with a group called Time Rich, and I'm super passionate about what they're doing. The reason I'm passionate about it is because I think real estate agents suck at leveraging and they do a bunch of stuff that always bogs them down. And I'm all about it. Real estate agents getting to higher income so they can do passive income stuff. So the one thing that I took after that time audit, I ended up working with their group. They have a team of virtual assistants. And they allow you to use their services. And the service that I'm huge on and I really want to help real estate agents connect with and learn about is inbox management. And I've only taken that step. So like my email inbox, I went from spending two hours a day, 1 to 2, sometimes 2 hours a day in my email inbox to I probably spend less than 30 minutes a week in my email inbox.
Whoa.
Like,
which is like imaginary for real estate.
Yeah,
agents.
You're not even like responding to emails?
No, you get to a place where you can get them to respond as well to certain ones. But I do respond, but it's in such a way that it's all filtered and organized to the place where I'm literally just to the meat and it takes me probably 15 minutes or 10 minutes to just go, you know, and I do that probably once or twice every couple days. You know what I mean?
Wow. That sounds amazing.
Wow.
And it's really, it breaks the glass in your brain because if I'd have been listening to this podcast a year ago, I'd have been like, that's not me. That doesn't work for my business. That's not going to work for me. That's cool for him. You know, like my business, I generally do around 70 to 80 real estate deals personally every year. Like that's been what I do. And for me to think that I couldn't live in my email inbox was like imaginary. What if someone needs me? It's a fallacy. It's wrong. It's a myth. This has been amazing. And so the company, I want to give real estate agents, their whole mission is giving your time back. And I really think like it's freed me up to do some way cooler activity when we're talking about dollar per hour stuff. So.
Wow. Sweet.
Yeah, we'll like
put
that
in there. Social media. Where are you at on social media?
Kyle Reedstrom on Facebook. I have a YouTube page, with the Midwest Investor Report is the content I put out there. So Kyle Reedstrom on YouTube. And then I'm pretty active on, Instagram as well. So Kyle_Reedstrom, on Instagram. And I always say for real estate agents, man, I copypreneur off of other people's content all the time. And I advise people to do that to me. And a lot of it's not real estate stuff. It's just like, hey, we want to be real people. So yeah, hopefully we can be friends on socials. I'd love that.
Dude, thank you so much for coming on today. It's fun to talk with somebody who's thinking through some of the same pain points, but then vision and coming up with a plan to tackle that. And not just for yourself, but you're at the point where you're trying to help other people get there too.
So. Yeah, guys, this is I love the show. I love how you guys do it. You guys are great hosts, and it's been a joy to be on here, man.
Awesome, man. Thanks. Hey, blessings. As always, excited that you joined us on another episode of the Reinvest Podcast. If this episode added to your tool belt or left you feeling inspired, go ahead and share it with a friend. Stay tuned every Tuesday for new episodes. And if you want to get in touch with us, go to our LinkedIn or Facebook profiles and shoot us a message. Move farther, reach higher, and grow deeper. See you next time.